Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to this week's show, everybody. I still have this chest cold. I got this chest cold. It won't go away. I got it. You probably heard me on the Jim Guthrie episode of the podcast a few weeks ago, complaining about how I got this cold, and now it's here. And I'm doing my best with it, but it's a bit cumbersome, I will say. But having said that, I'm excited about this week's show. John Spencer, the John Spencer Blues Explosion, joins me for a chat, and you're going to hear that in just a little bit. And I don't know, I had other big plans for the podcast this week. I wanted to do a panel about Yeezus by Kanye West, but it didn't quite work out. We'll see. Maybe I can reschedule it. People had to cancel. That was my plan. I had a lot of things to say about Yeezus. Not going to happen. But that said, there's going to be some good stuff this week, I think. I mean, starting now. Let's start now. Let's start now with John Spencer, shall we? After our word from our sponsor. This week's episode of Creative Control with Vish Khanna is brought to you by the Eden Mills Writers Festival, which celebrates its 25th anniversary this September 13th to 15th in the beautiful village of Eden Mills, just outside of Guelph, Ontario. Over the last quarter century, the festival has grown into a nationally acclaimed and widely respected literary event dedicated to promoting and raising awareness of Canadian literature, both young, emerging authors and writers, and very well-established ones. And they have a very exciting program planned for this year. For more information about the festival, visit EdenMillsWritersFestival.ca. For a good chunk of time, there wasn't a more exciting band in any land than the John Spencer Blues Explosion. When this New York trio burst onto the scene 20-odd years ago, they made a powerful impact, boom, like a cannon, combining the raw irreverence of punk with the swing and swagger of funk, soul, and hip-hop, all the while reinventing the blues for a younger generation of fans ready to throw down. After their 2004 record Damage, the Blues Explosion were active for a bit and then stopped functioning for a few years, but sometimes they come back. In 2012, they released a heavy-as-hell album called Meat and Bone, and their current tour brings them to Canada for Calgary's Sled Island Festival on June 20th, and then Ottawa, Hamilton, and London, Ontario dates this July. Here now to discuss a high percentage of the things I just mentioned on the horn from New York City is the unbelievably talented John Spencer. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to speak with you again.
It's nice to speak with you.
You and I spoke a few times about your band Heavy Trash, which started up while the Blues Explosion were taking a break. And at the time, I kind of recall you leaving the nature of that hiatus up in the air. Can you maybe talk now about why you guys took some time off?
I think for the main reason was that I was the guy that proposed it. I wanted to take a break because I wanted to work on Heavy Trash. Heavy Trash started actually probably before the Blues Explosion knocked off work, you know, before the Blues Explosion break. The first Heavy Trash record was in 2005, so Matt and I were probably hanging out and writing songs, at least definitely in 2004, if not before. Mm-hmm. The Blues Explosion, we'd had a, you know, there had been times when we'd paused before, and but back in 2005, yeah, I was really just wanted to spend more time, or all of my time, working on Heavy Trash. I was interested in doing different kind of music and collaborating with other people. So that's what I did.
Okay. And you mentioned Matt Verderay, your Heavy Trash collaborator. He's actually present on the new Blues Explosion record, right?
He is, yeah. We tracked the record out in a very nice studio called the Key Club in Benton Harbor, Michigan. It was in October of 2011, and then we brought the tapes home and did some more work in New York City at Matt's New York Head Studio. And so that's where we added some little noises and bits and pieces, and that's where I did most of the vocals there. And it was very nice to work with. It's always nice to work with Matt Verderay, and I especially enjoy recording, singing with him. He's a very good producer of vocal sound, you know, getting a good vocal take.
Sure.
And then I ended up mixing a few of the songs at Matt's place. So yeah, Matt Verrey and New York Head do figure into meat and bone.
I don't want to get patriotic here, but isn't Matt Canadian?
Matt is. He was born in Egypt, but he most of his time growing up was in Montreal. Yeah, so he's basically Canadian. Yeah.
Nice. That's another one for us.
Yep. I think you got a good, a pretty good streak going there.
I think so too. I'd like to think so. Yeah. So that explains the hiatus. What got the Blues Explosion back up and playing again?
And 2007 in the Red, the great California label released a collection of some of our singles that we've done with them over the years, the compilation of our jukebox singles. And, you know, we'd always gotten offers to play when we were not working. But then once this comp came out, we began to get a lot more offers. And so me and Jude and Russell, we talked about it. We figured, let's go play some shows. Why not? And so I think it was in the summer of 2008, we went and did some festivals in Europe. And, I was very apprehensive, nervous about it. I wasn't sure if it was going to work. And I think every little step along the way, the first time we practiced, it went okay. And then the first show we did. And, I felt more confident and stronger. That first tour went all right. So a few months after that, we did some more dates, and then it just slowly began to pick up speed. We began to accept more concert offers and tour more. And then 2010 or 2011, we began to talk about the possibility of making another studio record.
Hmm. Aside from the obvious time off, was there anything else that kind of fostered this apprehension from you about getting back at it?
I guess I was worried that, if we would still be any good, if we'd be able to play a good show whether or not the kind of musical glue or the telepathy or whatever it is, if that would still be present. I personally a little troubled, thinking like, well, what would it feel like? Because being in a band, you're in these very unusual forced situations where you got to be, in close quarters with people for a lot of time. I mean, yeah, it's great to play a concert, but then, the other 23 or 22 hours in the day or on tour, it's a drag, So it takes some doing.
Often when you leave or resume a longstanding working relationship like this one, you end up learning some things about your dynamic together. And you mentioned that kind of the 23 hours off stage, but has anything been illuminated for you about this band and the role it plays in your life?
I think that it's I've not had any major revelation. Since the hiatus and since we started playing again, everyone, my impression is all three of us really value the band a lot more. We now cherish the working relationship and the work, and we kind of protect that. And it's not like we're not in this band because we're like the Monkees or we're trying to have kicks or it's fun and all, but it's. I think we're in the band because we want to make this kind of music and we enjoy the work. Mm. And so we're very protective of that. And we're, I think also protective and respectful of each other, So we're not kids. We're grown men, we're middle-aged men. And so we look out for each other and we don't step on each other's toes for the most part.
Right. As I said earlier, Meat and Bone has this ferocity to it, lots of cool sounds and arrangements. It's the record that got you guys playing together again. How would you describe your approach to it going in versus what you ended up with?
Whenever we make a record, we don't really have a plan beforehand. Of course, we'll book a studio time, and if we're going to work with somebody like an engineer or producer, we're going to hire somebody in like that, we'll discuss that. But I don't think the record really, at least for me, it's, you don't really know what it's going to be until it's done. Like I said, we were really excited, jazzed, you know, thrilled to be working together again, to be playing. And I think we really appreciated that and valued it. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is, you know, this really powerful motorcycle or rocket engine or something, you know. And I think that that kind of pride or thrill or you know, power really influenced the meat and bone and the kind of record we made. It is a very, I think you said something about raw, or it is, you know, it's a very live record. It's really just sort of the band playing these songs on the floor of the studio. Mm-hmm. It is a very much a rock and roll record, and it's, I think it is wholly us. It's very just the Blues Explosion. You know, we've done some studio albums in the past that have been quite experimental as far as approach or production, and this is really, you know, the band. It's the focus is the band, and so yeah, I'm kind of losing the train of this right here.
That's fair. You know, you mentioned the rawness and the recording of it earlier. You mentioned the Key Club recording studio. I just met Bill Skibb and Jessica Ruffins the other day in Chicago, and they worked on this LP with you, right?
They did, yeah. I first met them. I may have met Bill at the Steve Albini's electrical studio a long time ago. The Blues Explosion tracked Acme there. Mm-hmm. This was back in '98, I think. And I'm pretty sure that Bill was a house engineer at Albini's electrical studio at that time. So I probably met Bill before. I can't remember if I met Jessica. I definitely met them and worked at the Key Club on the Andre Williams record Night and Day, which was masterminded by this Dallas Good from Mercedes. And that session took place on a couple off days on a Heavy Trash tour. And this is a while ago, man. This, you know, 2006 or something. You know, that record was started a long time ago, and only just came out last year, I think. But that session with Andre was a bit of a train wreck, the studio, the Key Club, was amazing, and I was really knocked out, and I've wanted to go back there ever since. And so when it became time to do Meat and Bone, I was able to convince Judah and Russell that we should go out there and do it.
Hmm. Yeah,
Bill and Jessica are both wonderful engineers, and they have a fantastic collection of beautiful old equipment.
Yeah, and my understanding is that Bill and Jessica also helped build Steve Albini's electrical audio studio. So when you were talking about, you know...
That may be true. They definitely built their place as well.
Yeah, so they're talented people. They were nice to me. Yeah. They seemed fond of Canada.
What was the circumstance of your meeting them?
Oh, I went down to go see my friends in a band called Fucked Up recording at Electrical Audio, and Bill and Jessica, Jessica seemed to be preoccupied with sort of family things, but I believe Bill was primarily in charge of this. Well, Bill was clearly in charge of the session.
Oh, so he's running, yeah? But they're tracking it at electrical?
Yeah, they decided to go to electrical instead of the Key Club for some reason, and I'll leave that to them. I don't know why, but I think, you know, electrical's, they were just tracking drums and rhythm guitars, and, you know, electrical has a reputation for getting amazing drum sounds, and Bill said, yeah, let's go do it, so they did it.
Yeah, and this was Fucked Up, you said, yeah?
Yeah, the band Fucked Up, yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was cool, yeah. We had a great time. I was only there a few days, and Steve made me a delicious coffee, a Weasel coffee. Are you familiar with Weasel coffee, John?
No.
There's these civet cats in, like, Southeast Asia, and they climb up these trees.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this. Yeah,
and they eat the whatever, and then they poop out the coffee, and then people harvest the coffee, and it's all ready to go. So, Steve took great joy in making me a Weasel coffee. I don't know.
Haven't tasted.
Oh, it was amazing. Although, you know, he said it was too strong on its own, so he made me a fluffy coffee. I'm not a coffee guy. Do you drink a lot of coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't drink a lot of it. My wife tries to get me into it. But anyway, I enjoyed it. He put a lot of syrup and milk, and it just tasted fantastic. It tasted great.
All right.
I recommend the Weasel coffee at Electrical Audio, if I might say. Let's talk about Canada. You're coming to Canada. what has your relationship been like with Canada? I know you're fond of us, you're fond of some of our people, but, you know, we're so close to where you are. What do you make of Canada?
Seems like a pretty cool place.
You're fond of it. You like coming. You don't. Are there any like countries you dread going to in the Blues Explosion? I mean, at this point, you could probably just be like, you know what, we're not going there anymore. Canada is clearly.
Well, I mean, yeah, Canada's nice. It's convenient. It's close by. It's not so. I mean, it's probably worse coming back into the States, crossing that border, than it is crossing into Canada. But that's no fault of Canada. That's really down to the U.S. Border Patrol. I guess the places that I'm not so psyched to go to anymore are places like Australia or Japan that are, you know, take many, many hours to get to, and also require visa work. Canada's is handy. It's convenient. But it has some great cities. You've mentioned a few of them there, and there's a lot of hip people up there and a lot of very talented people as well. As far as the Blues Explosion, we've really always enjoyed a very warm reception. You know, we've had some great shows there, and you know, anywhere we've ever played in Canada over the years. Yeah.
No, we love you. If I may speak on behalf of the entire Dominion of Canada, we're quite fond of your band here.
Oh, thanks.
We're glad
it's mutual.
The Blues Explosion's profile rose during a period when terms like alt or indie rock were being embraced and bands like yours became, I think, really influential. This was all roughly, you know, I'm speaking of a period that was roughly 20 years ago now.
And we were talking about this new album, Meat and Bone, and now I remember where I was going. I mean, I think that with the In the Red compilation and with all the reissues that were done in 2010, which we hadn't mentioned, you know, we've done this huge campaign of reissues for all the Blues Explosion back catalog. We basically just told the story of the first 10 years of the band. It was a huge project. And I think kind of that was those things kind of fueled our fire. And we took we really had this kind of store of energy and wisdom or power. And I think that's been with us since we began playing again. And it was definitely with us in the studio. You know, this wasn't our first record, but in some ways it kind of felt like it was. There was a real fire. But at the same time, you know, like I said, we're old guys, and we did exactly what we wanted to do, and we took our time. It wasn't like we felt any rush. And I think the Blues Explosion has always done just what it's wanted to do, and we are in that sense a very punk or independent band. Maybe for a while we were sort of had some greater success or fame, but we really always done just what we wanted to do, and certainly with this new record, this is, you know, we did it on our own dime. We made exactly the record we wanted to do, and I think we've always been true to ourselves.
Yeah, no, that's fair, and I think that's why the band's sound and aesthetic really resonates with people. I think there's a renewed interest in the culture that you were really a part of and part of bolstering back, like as I mentioned, 20 years ago. Obviously, bands from that era are back together and playing shows again, and there's something of a revival of the aesthetic. What's your take on that? Does it seem plausible that something revolutionary took place in terms of music in the 90s at this point?
I got no idea. I mean, for me, I felt that there was something, I felt much more connected to a scene in the 80s when I was playing with Pussy Galore. And, you know, those early trips, those first few tours of mine around the States and meeting all sorts of people, you know, all over the country, and not just in the States, but also, you know, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver. It seemed to me that there was something, you know, going on. And like I said, I really did feel much more connected. I mean, the 90s seemed to, you know, honestly, yes, I mean, the Blues Explosion, we did enjoy some, I guess, some greater success at that time. But it also was spelled was the end of the American underground. You know, that was,
yeah,
was, you know, when it all kind of went to shit.
Was the trade-off worth it though? Because at the same time, the underground was sort of, you know, whether it wanted to or not, it was sort of raised up to some extent in terms of profile, not necessarily in terms of anything else, but was the trade-off worth it on any level?
I don't know. I mean, maybe you're asking the wrong person. You should ask, you know, somebody who's rich who actually made money off of it. You know, I'm still, you know, yeah, I can make a living, but we like the shark. We can't stop moving.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what about now, though? As I mentioned, and I think this is true, and I've seen it over the last few years, that era has really been re-embraced, or rather embraced by people who weren't there. I mean, now...
I don't know. I you know, you're asking a 48-year-old man. I don't know, like, re-embraced by who? By kids in their early 20s? I don't know. I'm not hanging out with kids in their early 20s.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's on their mind. As far as just me traveling from town to town, not just in the States, Canada, but all over the world, I mean, yes, we still have people that are interested in us and the Blues Explosion, and I'm very thankful that I'm very grateful. It's not like we're playing to huge crowds. They're decent crowds, but, you know, but I haven't noticed any great upswing as far as the numbers of attendance. And it's not like I've noticed a real upswing or a greater numbers of younger people. It seems to be a real mixed bag. There's a lot of people, you know, that probably may have seen us 20 years ago.
Hmm.
And there's some people that you know, who are younger, but it's not like, oh, there's this huge wave of new people that are discovering the Blues Explosion. And yeah, honestly, I wondered about that before we released Meat and Bone, before this new studio album came out. Would this, you know, would there be, you know, some few big new surge of people discovering the band? And I don't think that really happened, you know, and I don't, you know.
Again,
I think you can only say, like, well, you know, we didn't make the record. This record, same as all the others, same as every show we do. Not so much the shows, I guess, but, you know, we do it for us. You know, we do it because we're fans. You know, it's like we're like a garage band at heart, but we really are true to ourselves, and we you know, we're doing this because that's what's in our hearts.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's nice to have people like what you do, but. We didn't try to make Meat and Bone thinking like, well, what could be a hit, or how do we appeal to this demographic? We're doing this because this is, you know, it's our passion.
You know, it might be wishful thinking from 35-year-olds like myself. When we see people like Archers of Loaf or Jawbox or Superchunk or whoever on TV, you know, all these bands are kind of back at it, you know, and there seems to be this renewed interest in the history of music on some level. Not to suggest that people like that are historical figures.
These are all bands that stopped, you know, didn't they? And they all bands that said, okay, that's it.
Yeah, a lot of them.
We're done, we quit.
Yeah.
I mean, we're at the Blues Explosion. I mean, yeah, it's kind of, but we're not really in the same bag. We're not like the Breeders or the Pixies that said, that's it, it's over. And this isn't, I'm always, I hate to be called about lumped in with this kind of reunion scene, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We took 3 years off. We didn't work for a few years. That's true. But we never said there was never a full stop put on it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't work for a while. I think also that the bands that you mentioned, these are, yeah, they were indie bands, but they were, you know, I don't think they're as weird as the Blues Explosion.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, people always ask me about, you know, people, a band, they ask me about the Black Keys, the White Stripes, and, you know, those are cool groups and everything, but they're not so punk.
Hmm.
You know, it's very familiar music. It's a lot more, I don't know, mainstream or pop, or it's not really the same bag.
Right.
You know, I think that we've always been, you know, more out there and always been a bit confrontational. And it's probably, you know, that's probably why we're not driving gold Cadillacs. But, you know, we're satisfied or sold.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I appreciate that. You know, many casual fans of the Blues Explosion still cite Orange as this milestone in your discography. We're coming close to its 20th anniversary. Can you reflect a bit on where the band was at while writing and recording that LP?
You know, I really don't remember that session very well at all. I can remember some of the mixing, but apparently the sessions were a real disaster, a true train wreck. If you look at the check out the reissue that we did a couple years ago, the liner notes tell a story. And when we were working on that reissue, you know, the guy who wrote the liner notes, Mike Edison, would talk to me and to Judah and Russell. And in the case of Orange, he also talked to Jim Waters, who was the co-producer and you know, the guy who the studio owner, the guy who helped us make the record. And I mean, we had a couple false starts when we were trying to record that record. One session was cut short by the death of Jim's father. Another session was cut short because of Judah Bauer's drug habit at the time. Hmm. So we'd written these songs and we played them live for some weeks or months. You know, we really knew the material or most of it, but apparently things were not so easy during the session.
Hmm.
But it came together. I think the thing with Orange is that it is, you can look at those first three records. There's the first album, there's Extra Width, and then the third is Orange. And over the course of those three records, the band sort of defines itself. And with Orange, everything has come fully into sharp focus. And each band member has defined his role. And you know, all pistons are firing. After Orange, and then from then out, we begin to sort of deconstruct that and turn it inside out and explore, you know, all sorts of different things. But with Orange, it's sort of the summation of what we've been doing for those first few years. It really is like, okay, now the cake is done.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's always curious to me that's the one that seems to resonate the most with people. I'm a huge fan of it. Don't get me wrong, but it's just curious that people fixate on that so much. Because I remember when Now I Got Worry came out, I was like, this is the greatest record I've ever heard. And I loved Orange to death. I got to see the band on that tour. I got to see you on the Now I Got Worry tour. And there was just something really, I don't know, just something really grabbed me about the follow-up. But yeah, Orange, for some reason, to this day, I don't know if it was just that it captured the mood and the time a bit better. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
I don't know. I don't know either. I think that if you try and, you know, but the thing is just, if you try to, you can't make records or write a song or paint a picture or write a book thinking like, okay, well, how do I do that again? Or, you know, well, why did, you know, the result will be terrible. You just gotta, you know, it's who knows why certain, you know, records or artworks resonate more than others.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. No one knows, but I'm just glad you're making them. You know, you mentioned, you made a couple allusions to this earlier about how, you know, there's people that have maybe became more successful than you did financially. You know, you're still making a living. There's this weird uncertainty in music right now. I think some people think that the freedom of the internet and advances in recording technology means that there's never been a better time to be making and distributing music. Other people still talk about the death of the music industry. You know, you're a man of wisdom and experience. I'm curious, are you any more empowered today than you were 10, 15 years ago?
No, it's pretty much the same. I've always been fiercely independent and always, you know, try to do everything as DIY as possible. You know, I've always protected the band's interests and, you know, we've always had full creative control and, you know, I've always watched all the contracts and business dealings like a hawk. So the kind of world that people are talking about now is, you know, well, that's been, you know, that's been my world since 85, you know, and,
it's the same. I mean, for you, you feel as empowered as you ever have. It's not a defeatist thing. I hope.
No.
Okay. Are there any musical trends that give you hope as a fan of music?
I don't know. What are some of the trends going on?
I don't know. I just am throwing stuff out there. There's lots of stuff going on. I just wonder if you're an active music listener.
Yeah, I am. But honestly, most of what I listen to is probably from the past. But there are current bands that still fall in love with, you know. It's great to get turned on to something new. I'm not, you know, I don't go out as much as I used to, you know, 20, years ago. Or I don't buy as many new records as I used to 20, 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's, you know, what I don't have a problem with that.
That's what life's about at some point, I suppose.
What's that?
That's what life's about. At some point, you just stop buying as many records. You do other stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what's next for you and the John Spencer Blues Explosion? I mentioned the tour dates. You just put out the record. Are there any other plans?
We have more shows this summer, not just in Canada, but also the States and Europe and Japan. We're going to continue to tour, but it is going to slow down a little bit. There probably will be some kind of EP or single that will be released in the next 2 or 3 months. We're finishing that up now, and at some point I'd like to. There's a bunch of there's a lot of stuff that's still kind of in the vaults we can put out, and I'm hopeful to get some of these things out. You know, there's some really great live recordings we have. Anyway, there's some interesting things. And other than that, I'm trying to finish another Heavy Trash record with Matt. So I was actually just in the studio with him yesterday. I was at New York Head, and we sort of we have tracked most of the record a long time ago, and wrote most of it a long time ago, but it never really finished it. So we're trying to oil up the joints now and get back at it.
That's amazing. That's great to hear. What about this EP? Can you give us any more insight about the EP or single that you might be putting
out? Well, the lead track has been released already in Japan. It's a cover of the Beastie Boys song, She's On It. It's a medley of that and the Link Ray song, Jack the Ripper. So that's been issued previously already in Japan. And we've been playing this. We probably play it at every concert we do. So we thought, well, let's make it available for the rest of the world.
Okay, so that's the main track, and the rest of the songs are up. Have you figured those out?
Yeah, but I kind of hate going on about it because, you know, in the case that it doesn't, it all falls apart, then, you know, it'll be good.
Okay. That's all I need to hear. I just need to hear that it's good. Well, once again, the John Spencer Blues Explosion's latest LP is called Meat and Bone, and their current tour brings them to Canada for Calgary's Sled Island Festival on June 20th, the Ottawa Blues Fest on July 11th, This Ain't Hollywood in Hamilton on July 12th, and Call the Office in London, Ontario on July 13th. For more information, please visit the johnspencerbluesexplosion.com. John, it's always nice to speak with you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's nice to talk with you.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern, and you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkana.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.